Relevant. Connected. Great conversation. The Rick and Suzanne Show. Catch them live. Weekdays 1 to 3 on CJAD 800.
Thank God it's Friday. Summer and Fridays, and you know, Fridays don't deserve the kind of news that people are getting where Carmi lives in his neighborhood. Carmi Levy, tech analyst for Yahoo Canada, kind of in the middle of RIM, Research in Motion territory. 5,000 jobs cut. The BlackBerry, what's a black day for BlackBerry, Carmi? What's the mood like around you there?
Ooh, it's dark. It's a glorious sunny day where I am, but I can tell you there's just a lot of mopey faces around because it doesn't just affect Waterloo, where RIM's headquarters is. It really does affect the entire region. It's a kick in the teeth to Canada's tech industry. You know, RIM has always been this source of pride for everybody, and to see it fall on such hard times and to sort of see that number, 5,000 jobs gone, to see that, you know, that they can't bring a new product to market, just rumors of a breakup, all that stuff. It's all coming home now, and it's real tough to swallow.
What do we know about their future? What's in the known category?
Well, in the known is that now they've re-queued to bring their next-generation smartphones, known as BlackBerry 10, to market in the first quarter of 2013. They keep pushing it back and pushing it back. We know that they're moving ahead with getting rid of 5,000 people, and the company's going to be a lot smaller over the next few months. We do know that two banks, RBC Capital Markets and JP Morgan Chase, are looking into, at the company's request, strategic options. And so that could include simple restructuring. It could include partnerships, could include splitting the company into two, or it could include selling it partially or completely. And so there are a whole bunch of balls in the air right now. And, you know, right now the next few months are looking pretty cloudy as the company tries to navigate what's arguably the most difficult chapter in its existence.
And what are pundits such as yourself and tech analysts, what do they think is going to happen?
Well, it's definitely turned negative. I think, you know, once we saw the numbers yesterday, we expected negative and we got negative and then some. And I think once it kind of sank in the analyst community, we all realized that RIM's ability to come back from the brink as a freestanding company is pretty much gone. That, you know, basically the RIM of the future is going to be radically different than the RIM of today, and it's probably going to involve some third party coming in and buying part or all of it, or the company being broken up into its constituent parts. But RIM as we know it today probably isn't going to be in the same form if we talk about it a year from now.
Why did this happen? Why do you think this happened?
Well, it's interesting because today is June 29th, and if we remember exactly 5 years ago today was the day that Apple announced the first generation iPhone. And I think that was the day that the world changed for RIM. Company didn't know it then. But when it was introduced, then CEO Mike Lazaridis essentially dismissed it as a toy. He said, you know, nobody wants color screens, and nobody wants touch screens, and nobody wants, you know, like a device that's fun. It's just a toy. We want, you know, everybody wants secure messaging and keyboards and exactly what the BlackBerry is delivering. We don't need to change a thing. And that really remained the company's mantra for years, really right up until they left, till the CEOs were booted out in January and replaced. So, you know, the culture of the company is really what did it in. It felt that its technology was going to be enough forever. And as we know in tech, that just doesn't play. The world is going to catch up with you and literally beat you into the ground if you don't adapt quickly enough. And that's
but
what
it's,
happened here.
It's interesting because what you're saying is almost verbatim what I hear from a producer here, Dan Delmar, swears by his BlackBerry. I don't want to put words in James Menny's mouth in the Gazette, though. I mean, he's got the BlackBerry. And that's how they feel about it. I have a toy. I have an iPhone. They have what they need as a tool.
Yeah, I'll wear the flag. I'm a loyal BlackBerry user as well, and I use it for work too, because literally my entire business hinges on my BlackBerry. But at the same time, I recognize that we are not the majority of the market. So at one time, the smartphone market was relatively small, composed mostly of kind of tech-savvy early adopters, very heavily prevalent in media, of course, and then it exploded. Then around when Apple introduced the iPhone, it became the domain of, you know, my in-laws and our friends and folks who weren't necessarily all that tech-savvy, and they don't really care about work, and they don't really care about keyboards, and all they want is the apps, and they want this thing to be easy to use, and they want it to be sleek and sexy, that when they pull it out at a party, that people gather around so they can share the latest app that they've downloaded.
Yeah.
And that's an experience that RIM has never been able to offer. It does have an app store, but it's just a woeful copy of what Apple has, and unfortunately, the core loyal users are a tiny minority now, and they don't represent the mass market.
All right. Well, 5,000 jobs gone today. Sad, sad. And we're going to continue our conversation with Carmi Levy, as we do on Fridays, tech analyst for Yahoo Canada. You can follow him at Carmi Levy on Twitter, by the way. And more about Samsung's war with Apple, because that's an interesting story, too. Facebook's done some weird things this week. And there's a new app in Montreal for parking that we want to talk about. It's Carmi Levy, tech analyst, Yahoo Canada, on tech issues. And this is interesting. Samsung and Apple, I don't know who's at war with. Well, they're at war with each other, and they're trading shots. And what does that mean to us, the consumer? We're not getting a product.
No, we're not. It means that there's an injunction banning the sale of the Galaxy Tab 10.1 in the U.S. And if it isn't available in the U.S., it's going to be almost impossible to find here in Canada, because we get most of our supplies through them. And what it means is that Apple and Samsung have been duking it out big time in court for much of the last 2 years, back and forth and back and forth. And it's not just in North America. It's in dozens of countries around the world. There have already been injunctions banning Samsung sues Apple, Apple countersues Samsung. At various points, you haven't been able to buy iPads in Australia or Galaxy Tabs in Germany. And it just kind of keeps spreading even further. And what it does is it illustrates just how important this tablet market is. It's growing. Right now, 15% of Canadians own a tablet, and so you can imagine, with 85% of us not owning one, over the next few years, billions of dollars of these devices are going to be sold, and Apple and Samsung want their fair share. And so, yes, they're fighting it out in retail, but they're also fighting it out in court, because if you can keep your opponent tied up in litigation for years and years and years, you can kind of slow them down and hopefully gain some kind of competitive advantage.
Yes.
It's infinitely fun to watch, but boy, sometimes it isn't very consumer-friendly when stuff like this happens.
Speaking about not being friendly, Facebook has done a couple of things that have ticked an awful lot of their users. This Friends Near You disappearing app, I got a little alert from a friend apparently who had been, I guess it works on who your friends are, who came through within about 100 miles of Montreal, so I got an alert that there was a friend near me. And then that app, that all disappeared. And then when I did get this other thing from a friend telling me, check your email and see what Facebook has done with that, it did annoy me that they switched my email address out for their own.
Yeah, hardly a week goes by that Facebook doesn't stick its foot deep down its throat, and this week it was lucky enough to do it twice. The first thing is that Friends Near Me capability. Really, a lot of people called it the Facebook stalking app, because essentially what it does is it makes it easier for you to know where your friends are geographically. And of course, if you carry a smartphone and you've got the Facebook app loaded on it, it uses the GPS on that device to kind of tell your Facebook friends where you are. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't really want everyone knowing where I am.
Yeah.
I don't even want to opt into it. It's more than a little creepy. So I think Facebook realized that after they kind of sent it out there, a lot of people complained, and they pulled it back. So it went live, and then whoosh, it disappeared, and I don't think we're going to be seeing it again anytime soon, at least not in its current form. So they've learned a lesson.
And you can reset your email address.
You can, and this is what bugs me about Facebook. So what Facebook did was last year, and I think we talked about it early on, just after they announced it, was they wanted their messaging to become better than it was, because the way it used to be, if you wanted to send a message to another Facebook user within the Facebook world, very easy to do. But if you wanted to send a message from inside Facebook to someone's regular email account, or vice versa, from the outside into Facebook, you weren't able to do that. So Facebook has since opened up its messaging world, and of course you can go back and forth. But what it did was, without telling people, there was a very small notice that went out that of course most people missed, they changed the email address that you gave Facebook when you first set up your account, which of course it would have been, you know, a corporate account or a Hotmail account or a Gmail account.
Yeah.
And they turned it in. They all of a sudden, your default address was Facebook.com. So it could be Rick Peterson or Suzanne Desotel. It's Facebook.com. And they didn't bother telling you. So all of a sudden, your advisories, your messages were now, you weren't getting them in your regular accounts. And for a lot of people who haven't even used Facebook.com, they weren't getting their messages until they kind of realized that people were talking about this, went into their accounts and said, hey, Facebook changed it on me. Which is, now granted, Facebook, the way it works is it wants more and more people to use this service.
Right.
But to kind of force them in the background, not very nice. Let them have the choice. Let them make the call. Let them flip the switch. If they decide that that's worth doing. But to do it behind the sort of, you know, behind the scenes like this, really dirty pool.
No kidding. No kidding. You haven't had a chance to say, I'm trying to find out what they're calling it. The new app they announced today, Parking Station Montréal, to where you can pay on your smartphone and rather than go back to the meter.
Yeah, I think that's paying by smartphone really was, that's what smartphones were invented for. And if you go into the Apple iTunes store, it's also available on BlackBerry and Android Google Play.
Yeah.
And the title is called P-Dollar Mobile Service. Or, you know,
what a stupid name!
It is. You can tell they're trying to play to both the French and the English audiences, and I'm sure they're not pleasing anybody. But it seems to work very well. The feedback that users are providing on the homepage is very positive so far. It allows you to pay by cell phone. You don't have to go looking now for one of those shared meters anymore. Yeah. You just pull up to a spot. There's a number on it. Punch it into the app. Punch in how much time you want. It pays on your credit card, and boom, off you go. And if you're stuck in a meeting and the meeting runs longer, you can always top it up as well so that you don't have a ticket when you get back to your car. No more running back and forth.
No, 40 cents seems fair.
Well, yeah, 40 cents per transaction, a little bit annoying. You know, granted, there should be a cost for this kind of service. I totally agree. It did cost them, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to build this app. They deserve an opportunity to make that money back. But the question is, once they've made that money back, are we still going to pay that 40 cents?
Yeah. Yes, we will. I think yes, I already know the answer to that.
And it'll probably go up to 50 and 60 and 70 at some
point. Carmi, don't go anywhere. Carmi Levy, tech analyst for Yahoo Canada. You can follow him on Twitter at Carmi Levy. And I have more questions about Google's glasses because they're getting closer to the market. Chrome perhaps being the best browser for your iPhone. And who is Kim.com? And why? And what the major victory was this week. Answers coming up next. Someone texted, and I want to be clear on this. Facebook did not change your email, the texter says, Carmi Levy. They added one to get their name out more, advertising thing. If someone asks what's your email, you can now say whatever at facebook.com. No, they didn't change your email. They changed the email that you want to function on Facebook to theirs.
Exactly. So your email is still there, but it's no longer the default. You have to go into your settings and then reset it back as your default, so the messaging, all messaging is now directed back to the account you originally intended.
And Lou wants a repeat of the name of the parking app, and it gives me a headache to try and do it, because it's P$ what?
Service Mobile.
P$ Service Mobile.
Yeah.
And I think if you even put Parking Montreal into the search engine at Apple or something.
Yes, you should. And the company that produces it is called Transcontinental, so that may also help your search. And you can search in it. It's available in both in iTunes, the iTunes App Store, as well as BlackBerry App World and the Google Play for Android.
All right. Quickly, before I have to get the news, Kim.com. Who is Kim.com, and what was the victory this week?
He founded the site called MegaUpload.com. It's the center of a global battle over copyright infringement. He was arrested in New Zealand earlier this year on criminal copyright infringement, and the FBI wants him extradited to the U.S. Basically, the search warrant that was used to search his house and sort of seek out all the data that's being used to indict him was deemed invalid. So basically, he's one step closer to possibly getting off.
That really his name, .com?
Yeah, he changed it in 2005. His name is Kim Schmitz. Well, I can imagine, yeah. I guess I'd probably want to change it to .com, too.
I don't know. His email address could be very confusing.
It could be. I'm sort of glad he changed it, though. Yeah, it's like .com.
Carmi, thank you, as usual.
Great being here, guys.
There's Carmi Levy, tech analyst for Yahoo Canada, joins us. And you can follow him on Twitter, at Carmi Levy. Every Friday to talk technical issues.
This is the Rick and Suzanne Show podcast. Hear Rick and Suzanne live weekdays 1 to 3 on CJAD 800.
First it was the bees, and now apparently it's the birds. And if we don't have birds and bees, it's going to be a very dull earth, I think. If not, one of the seven signs of the apocalypse. It is 1:38, and the bird counters have been counting birds in North America and in this country, in Canada, and they've come up with fewer numbers. And I'm wondering, should I push the alarm bell? But not before I call Dr. David Bird over at McGill to have a conversation about this. David, are you panicking?
I'm not panicking yet. I'm actually not over at McGill. I'm up in Shepherdville doing a survey of short-eared owls, which are on the endangered species list.
Short-eared owls?
And I'm also feeding the black flies here big time.
Yeah, I'll bet you're feeding the black flies.
Yeah, me. Coming back to this report that's just come out, nothing is really new to me in that report. It's all stuff that I was fully aware of what has been going on for a number of years. And basically, if you look at it, there's some good news and bad news. I mean, a lot of more bad news than good news. The bad news is the insectivores like the swallows and swifts and whippoorwills and nighthawks and so on are in serious trouble. We don't know why. Although my pet theory is I think it has to do with the fact that insects, I know that contradicts what I just said to you, but there's less insects, kind they like to eat, available to them. Shorebirds are in trouble as well because of all the places where they stage on their way south and on their way north during migration are all getting taken up by humans. We've got 7 billion people on the planet now. But the good news is that the birds, like the birds of prey, my favorite birds, and the ducks and geese and so on, they have their champions, and they've basically done a good job of saving habitat and doing captive breeding release programs and so on. So those birds are doing okay.
You just said something that's fascinating to me. As you feed the black flies, the insect eating birds, those numbers seem to be down because there's less bugs at the time they need them.
That's the thing. I mean, that's to do with the climate change, and there's some thoughts that maybe because of global warming, insect hatches are coming out either earlier or later, and the bird's timing is off. And that's a hypothesis that's out there right now. But the other thing, the reason that people don't necessarily have to totally panic, it's not apocalypse time and so on, is that some of these changes are due to basically historical changes in the landscape use, Rick, because, for example, loggerhead shrikes, now extinct in Quebec, hanging on by a thread in Ontario, those birds didn't used to be here a long time ago when it was all forested. There was no settlers. The settlers came in, cleared the land, and raised cattle, which kept the grass nation short. The loggerhead shrikes moved in, and now the reverse is happening. Now we're getting reforestation and that sort of thing, so those birds are disappearing. It's the same with spruce budworm. I mean, we've killed off all the spruce budworm with the spraying and everything else to save the trees, but meanwhile, a lot of warblers and evening grosbeaks used to eat those things.
Hmm.
So you see, we can't have it both ways. And you know something? There's a lot of people that are environmentalists that are against things like tar sands and the Keystone Pipeline and so on, and they say, well, we have to switch to our alternative energy sources. So I say to them, well, what about wind turbines? Oh, too ugly, and they kill birds and bats. What about hydroelectric? Oh, they're damming all the streams, killing off all the fish. What about nuclear power? Well, look what happened in Japan and Chernobyl. What about solar panels? And they take up tons and tons of area and so on. And so on, and coal is terrible.
Yeah.
So you can't have it both ways. People have to basically say, okay, so we put some wind turbines up and they kill a small number of birds. I mean, look at cats, for example. And that's a pet.
Here you go. I'm going to hear it on this one, yeah.
Well, the thing is that it's well known that they kill 100 million birds a year. But, you know, I can't tell you whether that's additive or compensatory, meaning if they didn't die from the cats, maybe they died from something else. I don't know the answer to that. But the point is that something we could do something about? If people like coffee, if they drink shade-grown coffee, a little bit more expensive, they'll save all that habitat down in the South American and Central America.
All right. So, well, there's many ways to help, and one of the things I want to ask while you're bringing up questions about this is who does the counting, and could the math be wrong?
I don't think the math is wrong. These are all done by very well-known scientists. I know the two guys that wrote the report, Charles Francis.
But who does the counting? How do they do the counting?
Well, the countings are done by scientists in the summertime doing breeding bird surveys. In fact, they're doing a big atlas of Quebec, renewing it right now. And they basically engage bird watchers who are very good at their hobbies, and they get them to go to certain areas and listen for birds and count the birds under a prescribed method, and they come up with all this data. So it's pretty good data. It's called citizen science, and anybody who's into bird watching can get involved with this kind of thing to help out. But I don't think the numbers are suspect at all. I think I read the report from one end to the other, and I think the figures look good. It's just that some species are getting hard hit, like bobolinks, for example, a grassland species. Unless we revise our crop harvesting practices and so on, these birds are going to be in trouble.
Yeah. I saw a Baltimore Oriole the other day, and it stops you. When you see something that colorful, that orange, and it sounds, the song is beautiful, and you just stop and you marvel at it.
Yeah, I don't think we're at the point now, Rick, where, you know, when everyone has to panic and think that it's a doomsday for all the birds or whatever, but I think if we keep on going the way we are, I'll tell you what scares me most about the future of the Earth is the 7 billion people going on to 9 billion by 2050. If that comes true, I don't know where we're going to get all the resources. And if if China and India, and why shouldn't they have the same things we have, all of those people, where's all the resources going to come from?
You see, now you got me feeling just a little bit better about the birds, and now you're getting me all, I just
well,
can't
I'm
win.
I'm sorry, Rick, but the thing is, I teach this stuff in wildlife conservation to McGill students, and so I hear about it every semester, and it can get depressing. You have to try and be as positive thinking as possible and think that, okay, some birds are going to lose, but with global warming, some species, like we didn't used to have cardinals and mourning doves and tufted titmice and turkey vultures in Montreal either, but they're here now because they've moved north.
Yeah.
So we're going to get some species that are going to move north, and yes, we're probably going to lose some of these Arctic and grassland species here and there, but there's also, you can't go by the species thing because there are actually molecular biologists out there, taxonomists, who are using DNA sequencing techniques to show that instead of this being one single species, it's actually two different species.
No. Now you see, now I'm information overload. Now you...
I got
a text. Here's somebody who wants a little bit of help. They've got, I'm just wondering in the last minute that we have, what you would tell her. She's got a bird nest outside her bedroom window. She's getting the 4 a.m. wakings right now as the rather agitated young ones are waiting for food, and then the aggravated mom shows up, and it's quite noisy. Can she get rid of the nest? Should she?
Well, if they've got babies in the nest, then the problem is that who's going to take them and raise them? And I don't think she wants to do it. Le Nichoir probably wouldn't be very happy if she removed the nest. I think that all she can do really is to put some white noise on a stereo set or something, or get some earplugs. It won't last forever. Baby birds are only in the nest for at maximum about maybe 14 to 20 days, and then it's over with. And then maybe she could take steps to remove the nest so they can't use it again.
Right, because they're apt to come back, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They don't necessarily use the same nest every year. In fact, most robins and those small birds don't use the same nest. But if you're going to remove a nest, as you see it being built or whatever, you do have to get permission from the Fish and Game Office.
All right.
In most cases, they'll give it to you.
All right. Good luck with those small-eared owls and
short-eared owls.
Short-eared owls, and good luck feeding the black flies.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rick.
Dr. David Bird. He's out of town. Taking care of birds, which he loves to do, and feeling a little more at ease, I am, over the news that the bird count is lower.
This is the Rick and Suzanne Show podcast. Hear Rick and Suzanne live, weekdays 1 to 3 on CJAD 800.
Suzanne will be sad she missed this. Away on vacation this week and next. I'll join her next week and spend some time in the sun, too, but I think she would look forward to having a conversation with Kathleen Ross Perkins. She stars with Matt LeBlanc, the new series episodes. It's back on HBO Canada. That's part of our Astral family, as you well know, and that's cool because it gives me access to people like Kathleen Ross Perkins to have conversations. And, oh my God, Kathleen, Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes are splitting up.
I know. I just stopped crying. I don't know what to do about it. It's killing me.
You'll never forget the where you were and when this happened. I guess.
Exactly.
Do you know either one of them?
I don't. Unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know what it is, but I don't know either of them.
Tell me about. I've been reading about Carol Rance, and I've been in and out of the series in the first season, and I PVR'd a lot of it to get caught up with. So I'm glad it's back again because it's going to be one of my favorite shows.
Oh, thanks.
Well, this is it. As soon as I start PVRing things, and you play this lack of a better word, anal retentive TV exec.
Yeah.
Tell me about Carol Rance, this character.
Well, she's exactly what you just said. Plus, she's very good at her job. She's a yes man, and she's made yesing an art form in a way. And so she's great at her job, but she's also the exact opposite in her personal life. And we get to see her personal life kind of unfold tragically through this series, and she's just a mess.
Because you're not.
Me personally?
No. Well, in either case, what I've been reading about you, I don't know you personally, but you're playing someone you're not, and on both sides of this, which is fascinating for me. But it's a kind of character where you have to play these two different people. It's got to keep you going.
Yeah, I kind of love the amount of she's got multiple personalities that she's dealing with, and that's my favorite type of character because I really do believe that in everybody there's lots of different facades, lots of different faces that we all kind of put on depending on the circumstance. So I love that they just don't make her one thing, and I'm not one thing either. I have that in common with her, although we are very different in a lot of ways. I can be one thing 1 minute and then a complete opposite thing the next. So I get it, you know.
Well, and people may be trying to place you, too, if they don't know the show. Kathleen Ross Perkins is who we're having a conversation with. But you've had parts in, say, Grey's Anatomy. What did you do in Grey's Anatomy?
In Grey's Anatomy, I played, that was about 4 or 5 years ago, I played a woman who had HIV, who was HIV positive but was pregnant and wanted to have an abortion, and had to deal with Katherine Heigl, plays the part of Izzy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and she tries to talk me into having the baby. So
it's big stuff, but you remember that. I mean,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
And Nip Tuck, what on Nip Tuck, what did you do?
I was a preschool teacher who bit children.
I'm sorry, yeah. I shouldn't laugh at something like that.
And that was another case of a two-faced person. Basically, she was really prim and proper, and then through the course of becoming sexually active with one of the stars, he found out that I was actually a real biter.
Mm.
Yeah.
Enough said. Enough said. I know when to move along. All right. So, from someone who bit school children on Nip Tuck, I have to know what you did on NCIS.
NCIS.
Yeah.
I played a coroner.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was a real weirdo. She really loved her job and loved finding out why people died.
Maybe a little too much. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe.
All right. You have to get away from the weird stuff. What are you doing? This current production of Lamb of God. Tell me about that.
Well, I'm not getting away from the weird stuff yet. I play a haggard Vegas prostitute in that.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. 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 It's fun, though. It's a really great script about and Diablo Cody's directorial debut.
Yeah.
She wrote it as well. Julianne Hough plays the lead, and Russell Brand is in it, Octavia Spencer, some really amazing talent there. And so it's around a woman kind of denouncing her faith in God and going to Vegas for one night of sin. And so I am just one of the many people she kind of comes in contact along the way.
All right, cool. And The Pact, I heard about it, Sundance, and you were in that, and that's coming out this year, right?
Yes. It's actually coming out this next month. Yeah.
You're not playing somebody weird in The Pact.
No, I actually am very normal in The Pact. You pick.
Yay!
Maybe the one role where I play a normal person.
And Cowgirls and Angels is that involves the rodeo, and James Cromwell, who I think the world, what a great actor, you're in that too.
Yeah, I actually just sat down with James yesterday for lunch.
Does he speak like that in everyday language?
He's very articulate.
Yes,
but he's not as stuffy as you would think. That's for sure. He's a really, really awesome, nice man.
Well, you've been a joy to talk to. I know that you're on a day where you're probably very emotional over the Tom Cruise, Katie Holmes news that they're splitting up.
I don't know what I'm going to do, Rick. What are you going to do?
I don't know. Here's what I suggest you do. I'm going to go out and see Ted tonight because I need a laugh, and you should go see Magic Mike.
Oh, perfect. And then we'll just swap notes.
All right. You send me an email review of Magic Mike, and I'll send you one of Ted.
Absolutely. I can't wait to see all those naked men. That's awesome.
All right, see, I know when to move along again. Kathleen, thank you very much for this. Good luck with episodes and Matt LeBlanc. It's going to be a real smash again, and you can see it on HBO Canada. And thank you for the time today.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Kathleen Ross Perkins.
Listen to The Rick and Suzanne Show live weekdays 1 to 3 on CJAD 800 and at CJAD.com.